Good morning, everyone. Am I right in thinking that we finished Canto 3 last week? Yeah? We should start reading Canto 4 this morning. So it's on page 46, and we should read at least the first section before we start our study. This is a unique canto in the book because it is not part of the narrative. We have Canto 3, which is the yoga of the soul's release, and then we have Canto 5, which is the yoga of the spirit's freedom and greatness. In between, we have this canto, the secret knowledge. And this is like a kind of Sri Aurobindo Upanishad. It means that in this canto is contained the essence of the knowledge, the secret knowledge, which Asvapati has gained by the release of his soul, and which is the basis of everything that happens afterwards. It's the basis of the whole poem. It's the standpoint which we have to understand all the rest. So it's worth studying it carefully and in detail and soaking in this secret knowledge which will help us to understand life in a truer way. So we'll start by reading the first canto, which is only a couple of pages long. Only the first line refers to King Asvapati. On a height he stood that looked towards greater heights. After that, it's a general statement that applies to us all. Would you read, Franz?
The secret knowledge. On a height he stood that looked towards greater heights. Our earlier hope to the infinite are sunrise splendors and marvelous blanch, while lingers yet unseen the glorious sun. But now we see with a shame of what must come. The earth's outlook to a remote unknown is the preface only of the deep decline of human soul from its flat earthly state to the discovery of a greater self and the far dream of an eternal light. This world is a beginning and a base, where life and mind erect their structured dreams. An unborn power must build reality. A death-bound littleness is not all we are. Immortal or forgotten vastnesses. A great discovery on our summit sets. Unmeasured grades and depths of being are ours. A key to an ineffable secrecy. Mystic, eternal, and unrealized time. Neighbors of heaven are nature's altitudes.
Thank you. Eckhart, would you read? Line 21.
Neighbors of heaven are nature's altitudes. To these high peak dominions sealed to our search, too far from surface nature's hopeful rooms, too lofty for our mortal lives to breathe, deep in us, a forgotten kinship points and a faint voice of ecstasy and prayer calls to those lucent lost immensities. Even when we fail to look into our souls or lie embedded in earthly consciousness, still have we paths that grow towards the light. Yet are there luminous tracts and heavens serene and Eldorados of splendor and ecstasy and temples to the Godhead none can see. A shapeless memory lingers in us still, and sometimes when our sight is turned within, Earth's ignorant veil is lifted from our eyes. There is a short, miraculous escape. This narrow fringe of cloud
Let's pause there. Thank you, Anandi. We're on page 47, line 45.
In the unfolding process of self, sometimes the expressive mystery lets human vessel of the self. A breath comes down from the superior air, a person's born. A guiding light awakes, a stillness falls upon the instruments, fixed, motionless, like a marble moon. Stone calm, the body is a pest, support an effigy of eternal peace, or a reverent force sweeps blessing in, out of some last superior continent. Knowledge breaks through, trailing its graven seas, and natural trembles, the power, the flame. Greater personality sometimes possess us, which yet we know is ours, and we are all the master of our souls. Then the small bodily ego things and falls, no more existing in its separate self, losing the punctilio of its separate birth. It leaves us one with natural.
Thank you. Paula.
In moments when the inner lamps are lit and the life's cherished guests are left outside, our spirit sits alone and speaks to its goals. A wider consciousness opens then its doors, invading from spiritual silences. A ray of the timeless glory stoops a while to commune with our sea's illumined clay and leaves its huge white stamp upon our lives. In the oblivious field of mortal mind, revealed to the closed prophet eyes of trance, or in some deep internal solitude, witnessed by a strange, immaterial sense, the signals of eternity appear. The truth mind could not know unveils its face. We hear what mortal ears have never heard. We feel what earthly sense has never felt. We love what common hearts repel and dread. Our minds hush to a bright omniscient. A voice calls from the chambers of the soul. We meet the ecstasy of the Godhead's touch in golden privacies of immortal fire.
Thank you. Will you read?
These signs are native to a larger self that lives within us by ourselves unseen. Only sometimes a holier influence comes. A tide of mightier surgings bears our lives, and a diviner presence moves the soul. For through the earthly coverings something breaks, the grace and beauty of spiritual light. The murmuring tongue of our celestial father, ourself and a high stranger who we feel, it is and acts unseen as if it were not. It follows the line of sempiternal birth, yet seems to perish with its mortal frame. Assured of the apocalypse to be, it reckons not the moments and the hours, great, patient, calm, it sees the centuries pass, awaiting the slow miracle of our change. In the sure, deliberate process of world force and the long march of all revealing time.
Thank you.
It
It is the origin and the master clue, the silence overhead and inner voice. Living image seated in the heart, an unwalled wideness and a fathomless point. The truth of all these cryptic shows in space, real towards which our strivings move. The secret grandiose meaning of our lives, a treasure of honey in the combs of God, a splendor burning in a tenebrous cloak. It is our glory of the flame of God, our golden fountain of the world's delight, an immortality cowled in the cape of death, the shape of our unborn divinity. It guards for us our fate in the depths within, where sleeps the eternal seed of transient things. Always we bear in us a magic key, concealed in life's hermetic envelope, a burning witness in sanctuary, regards through time and the blind walls of form. A timeless light is in us, is in his hidden eyes. He sees the secret things no words can speak, and knows the God of the unconscious world, and the heart of the mystery of the journey of the years.
Thank you. We'll pause there. We can go back to the beginning of the canto, and we'll look at these passages more closely. As I mentioned, this first line is the only link to the previous canto. It's this he is Asvapati. And we read last time what a great height he had reached, no? That the universal strengths were linked with his, filling earth's smallness with their boundless breadths. He drew the energies that transmute an age, immeasurable by the common look. He made great dreams a mold for coming things, and cast his deeds like bronze to front the years. His walk through time outstripped the human stride. Lonely his days, and splendid like the sun. So he's reached a very great height, but in the first line of Canto 4, Sri Aurobindo tells us that he's standing on a height that's looking towards even greater heights. His journey is not completed yet. Would you read the next sentences, please? Starting from line 2, our early approaches.
Our early approaches to the infinite are sunrise splendors on a marvelous verge. Lingers yet unseen to glorious sun, the glorious sun. What now we see in a shadow of what must come. The earth uplook to a remote unknown is a preface only of the epic climb of human soul from its fled earthly state to the discovery of a greater self and the far gleam of an eternal life. This world is a beginning and a base where life and mind erect their structured dreams. An unborn power must build reality.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about these lines?
Have a question?
Yes.
Why there must be a power to build reality?
An unborn power, power that's not yet born, not yet manifested, that will have to build reality. We are still, here he's talking not about Asvapati, about us, our early beginnings, our early approaches to the infinite. When we come here and we read this book, or when we go to Matrimandir and concentrate in the chamber, we may have experiences, glimpses. These are sunrise splendors. The dawn is so glorious, no? Just before the sun rises, that great, powerful sun that will dazzle us completely is still lingering, yet unseen. That is the Savitri sun. Savitri is one of the names of the sun, one of the many names of the sun. And it's the name of the sun before it rises above the horizon. So what now we see and experience is only a shadow, a faint trace of what must come. Throughout the poem, Sri Aurobindo is assuring us that we have a glorious future in front of us. It must come. So the way now that we look up from our earth to the something unknown far above us, that's just a preface, a first stage in this epic climb, this huge ascent that the human soul must make from its flat earthly state, embodied, hidden, disguised in matter, to the discovery of a greater self. And then it will see far above it the far gleam of an eternal light. This world, which is our environment and dominates our normal experience, is only a beginning and a base. And here on this basis of matter, life and mind are building their structured dreams. Wonderful dreams, in fact. But this is not yet reality. Another power beyond mind must build the divine reality, which is the earth's destiny. Yeah, the soul has accepted to descend into this flat earthly state and to take part in this adventure. There's a line about the adventure of consciousness, but before the adventure of consciousness comes the adventure of unconsciousness. No? And we are only, yes, we our souls have accepted to leave that marvelous, perfect state of oneness with the bliss and the pure existence and the omniscience, the perfection, to come and take part in this experiment, this game, this adventure. So we're still only at the beginning of it. We're here in this state where, on the basis of matter, life and mind have erected the structures that we are familiar with. But that's not the real reality. Evolution is not finished. There's much more to emerge. An unborn power must build reality. And then Sri Aurobindo continues to speak about us, ourselves. Patty, would you read?
A death-bound littleness is not all we are. Immortal, our forgotten vastnesses, await discovery in our summit selves. Unmeasured breadths and depths of being are ours, akin to the ineffable secrecy, mystic, eternal, and unrealized time. Neighbors of heaven are nature's altitudes. To these high peak dominions sealed to our search, too far from surface nature's coastal roots. too lofty for our mortal lives to breathe. Deep in us, a forgotten kinship points, and a faint voice of ecstasy and prayer calls to those loosened, lost immensities. Even when we fail to look into our souls or lie embedded in earthly consciousness, still have we parts that grow towards the light. Yet are there luminous tracts in heavens serene and Eldorados of splendor and ecstasy and temples to the Godhead none can reach.
Thank you. There was a time, maybe not so long ago in human history, when we human beings had a more exalted vision of who we are and our role and potentialities. We talk about...
Sorry, what is exalted?
Exalted means lifted up, higher. So we used to think of the human body as something divine, no? And the human existence as something divine. Nowadays, we are more likely to think of ourselves as naked apes, very little removed from the animals. And perhaps it's more difficult for the modern mind to believe in a divine destiny for us. So here Sri Aurobindo is again assuring us that this little humanity, this death-bound littleness, with our few years to live and our very limited human nature, this is not all we are. We have immortal vastnesses. We've forgotten about them in the course of involution, but they are waiting for us to discover them on the higher levels of our being. And we really have the potentiality of unmeasured breadths and depths of being. There's no limit to our potentialities. People tend to think that human nature cannot be changed, that nature is nature and that's the way it is, and we have little we can do about it. But here he says that the highest levels of nature are neighbors of heaven, very, very close to the divine levels of consciousness. And they are closely related to that ineffable secrecy, that secret reality and presence which can't be expressed in any of our human ways. The highest levels of nature are mystic, eternal in unrealized time, in the time that has not yet unrolled itself. So deep in us, something, a forgotten kinship, a forgotten close relationship, is pointing to those altitudes of nature, to those high-peaked dominions, which so far we can't reach. They are sealed to our search. They're closed off. We can't reach them. And then the next lines, he tells us why. On the next line, he says, those altitudes are too far from surface nature's postal routes. Even if we're using email, it's difficult to reach those heights, no? Those high-peaked dominions. And up there, on those high-peaked levels, our mortal lives can't breathe. The breath that keeps us alive here in our physical bodies is not available up there. There's another kind of breath. But still, deep in us, this forgotten kinship, this deep connection, we've come from there, no? Is pointing to them. And from deep within us, a faint voice of ecstasy and prayer is calling to those lost immensities, that we have lost when we accepted to enter the material universe. Those immensities that are lucent, full of light. And then he assures us that even when we are not looking into our souls, when we are absorbed in our daily routines and concerns, even when we are very tamasic and lazy, we're lying embedded in earthly consciousness, even then there are parts of us which are growing towards the light. And those wonderful countries, those luminous tracts, and serene heavens, and Eldorados of splendor and ecstasy, they are still there. Everybody's familiar with this word Eldorado? Yeah. Yeah, well, you are, of course. You're from South America. Yes. You don't. So I believe it's a Spanish word. It means the golden place. And those conquistadors who went to South America, they heard that there's a marvelous place which is just full of gold, a city which is built of gold. And that's what they went looking for. And they were ready to do anything to find that city. So now in English, the word means some glorious possibility that inspires us, calls us to go looking for it, but which we can't really reach. An Eldorado of ecstasy and prayer, and splendor and ecstasy. And there are also, although we may not be aware of them, within us, there are temples to that Godhead. None can see that invisible divinity, which he will tell us more about in the next lines. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I want to tell you some... I read the passage of prayer and meditation of the mother. And mother, after that, tell to Shorindo some signification. And Shorindo said, "You, the high mother, discuss with the supreme nature to the low nature for change."
Yes.
Very, very interesting. At this moment, what I understand that mother discuss with the very inner explanation is very, very interesting.
That's actually what our destiny is. No, to come in contact with our forgotten vastnesses and from there to channel that light and power and everything down into the world as it is. And the crystal in the chamber in Matri Mandir is a symbol of that. No? How we have to receive that light from above and spread it everywhere. Thank you. Poonam.
A sleepless memory lingers in us still, and sometimes when our sight is turned within, earth's ignorant veil is lifted from our eyes. There is a short, miraculous escape. This narrow fringe of clamped experience we leave behind, matted to us as life. Our little walks, our insufficient reach, our souls can visit in great lonely hours, still regions of imperishable light, all seen eagle peaks of silent power, and moon flame oceans of swift, fathomless bliss, and calm immensities of spirit space.
Thank you. We hear about peak experiences. Even modern psychology has to acknowledge that people experience amazing things. This happens often sometimes accidentally. Instead of being focused outside, we turn inside. Something in us wakes up. And then for a short time, there's a short, miraculous escape from this clamped, compressed experience of our ordinary life. Clamped experience that is meted out, measured out to us as life, as human beings. All our little walks, we may make a little progress, we may have a little experience. We can't reach far enough. That's the dissatisfaction that is in all human beings. We're all of us longing for something more intense, more delightful, more fulfilling, more satisfying. So he gives some examples of these peak experiences. All seeing eagle peaks of silent power. The eagles can fly so high and they have such a powerful vision that they can, from their heights, they can see so clearly. That's power. Then oceans as if lit by the moon in flame light. Oceans, unlimited expanses of swift, fathomless bliss. Fathomless, bottomless, can't be measured. Or calm immensities of spirit space. And then he describes another kind of peak experience. Praveen.
In the unfolding process of the self, sometimes the inexpressible mystery elects the human vessel of descent. A breath comes down from a supernal air. A presence is born, the guiding light awakes. The stillness falls upon the instruments. Fixed, motionless, like a marble monument. Stone calm, the body is a pedestal, supporting a figure of eternal peace. What a revealing force sweeps blazing in, out of some vast superior continent. Knowledge breaks through, creating its radiant seas, and nature trembles with the power of the flame. A greater personality sometimes possesses us, which yet we know is ours. For we adore the master of our soul, till the small bodily ego thins and falls, no more insisting on its separate self, losing the punctilio of its separate world. It leaves us one with nature and with God.
Thank you. As the self in us unfolds. It may happen that the inexpressible mystery from above chooses to descend into a human vessel, into a human individual, to contain it. And he describes three different experiences which may result when that happens. It may come down like a breath from that supreme air that we can't normally breathe. And then a presence is born in us and a guiding light awakes within the human being. The instruments of body, life and mind become absolutely still when they're possessed by that presence and that guiding light. So the body becomes like the base of a statue, stone calm, unmoving, solid. The body becomes a pedestal which is supporting a figure of eternal peace. That's how the individual experiences him or herself when this happens. Or instead of peace, there may come a force, a very strong energy of revelation, bringing knowledge. comes blazing in with great force and energy. It's as if from some huge continent on the higher levels, vast continent, it brings knowledge pouring down and breaking through into the human mold, trailing its radiant seas, seas of knowledge full of light. And then, instead of being stone calm, the body trembles, the nature trembles with the power and the flame of that descent. Or it may come in the form of a greater personality taking hold of us, not our normal little human self. And yet, although it's something different, we know that it's ours. Or we may experience the contact of the master of our souls. When any of those things happens, our little limited sense of self, our small sense of being confined within the body and being the center of the universe, that small bodily ego just fades away, falls off. It's not there anymore. It's no longer insisting. Maybe this is what is always happening normally. The small bodily ego is insisting on its separate self, its sense of separateness, losing the punctilio of its separate birth. It thins and falls and leaves us feeling our oneness with nature and with God.
What is punctilio?
What is punctilio? Yes, I'm just trying to express what punctilio is. I think it's a word perhaps from Spanish or from Italian, and it's connected with a point. Yeah. And this is usually a point of honor, of dignity. I'm so and so. How can they treat me like this? I have to sit in the center of the front row and be treated with proper respect, and they're not doing it. Punctilio. It's a sense of one's personal honor and dignity and what is due to you. So in the old days, I think that people used to fight duels on the grounds of punctilio, no? That I have not been treated correctly. I've not been recognized for what I am.
Which is a funny way of saying when the girl is too like that, puntillosa, because everything is wrong. She doesn't like anything. It's very,
And it's they're insisting on small details. So it loses all that punctilio of its separate self. I think it's Spanish, huh? Yeah.
No, it's not
Latin. Somebody can look it up in the dictionary and tell us.
It's not a Spanish word.
Yes.
Means when you are stubborn. It means also the same as the Spanish word, but I think this is the wrong spelling of the Italian
word. I have it here.
Yeah.
It's an Italian word meaning a fine point. In English, it sometimes refers to a highest point or apex or to an instant in time. So the usual sense is of a fine point of etiquette,
yes.
Or a scrupulous observance thereof.
And some people are obsessed with punctilio, with these little fine points of how things, you know, age before beauty and who has to be introduced to who and who has to sit where at the dining table and things like that. Punctilio. I think that's what it means in English. So when the ego gives up that insistence on its own importance and value, thins and falls because it's had this other experience, you know, then we can feel really all the barriers fall. It leaves us one with nature and with God. Sorry?
Eternal and immortal.
Yes. So, Danya.
In waves, when the large lines are lit, and the light chase just on the outside, or speech slips along, and fits to the spot, a wider consciousness opens then its door, invading from spiritual silence. A ray of the timeless glory struck the fire to commune with our seen's illumined day and lifts its deep white stem upon our left. In the ambiguous dream of mortal mind, revealed to the close spotted eyes of Christ, all in some deep internal solitude, witnessed by a strange immaterial sense, the signal of eternity appears.
Thank you. In moments of deep inner concentration, when we close all the outer doors, the doors of the senses, the doors of our attention, and we light the inner lamps, and we leave everything else outside, then our spirit can sit alone and speak to its gulfs, its immeasurable depths, and then a wider consciousness opens its doors, and a ray of the timeless glory from beyond time, from the transcendent world, a ray may invade our world from those spiritual silences. It stoops, it bends down for a while to communicate with our seized, illumined clay, our physical body, which gets seized by that presence and lit up by it. When that happens, it leaves a huge white stamp upon our lives. It can be a life-changing experience when that ray touches and leaves its stamp, the mark remains. And as a result, in this oblivious field of mortal mind, forgetful of its origin and its truth and its mission, the signals of eternity appear, the signs, the intimations. They may be revealed to the closed eyes of trance or seen in some deep, lonely place within, witnessed by another kind of sense, not our physical senses, but a strange immaterial sense, an inner subtle sense. These signals of eternity appear. We had a discussion the other day about the word prophet. Usually, when we use this word, we think about somebody prophesying what will happen in the future. But it doesn't always mean that. A prophet is perhaps a person who has some contact with the divinity and can bring a message from there, express a divine message. So these eyes of trance, they have that power of receiving and transmitting some divine knowledge. Can you read that to you? Thank you. These are different signals of eternity and our connection with it. Patricia, you would read?
These signs are native to the larger self that lives within us.
assured of the apocalypse to be, it reckons not the moments and the hours. Great, patient, calm, it sees the centuries pass, awaiting the slow miracle of our change in the sure, delivered process of world force and the long march of all revealed time.
Thank you. These signs, these signals of eternity, these peak experiences could not come to us if there weren't living within us a larger self. They are not native to our physical surface being. They are native to a larger self that lives within us by ourselves unseen. And we only feel the influence of that larger self occasionally, at special moments. No? Only sometimes some higher influence comes, or some surge of energy helps us to do something we normally couldn't do. There's a touch, we feel a diviner presence moving the soul. Or through the earthly coverings, through the physical coverings, something breaks through, a grace and beauty of spiritual light, and a murmuring tongue. It's a little flame which is speaking somehow of celestial fire, heavenly fire. This presence and this fire and grace light is ourself, our larger self. It's also a kind of stranger to us at the same time. It's always with us. It is, it exists, and it acts unseen, as if it didn't exist. It's following the line of sempiternal birth. Sempiternal, it's an interesting word. Something's eternal, how can it be more than eternal? But it's this word from Latin, semper, always, forever eternal. It's an intensification. This birth that our larger self is following goes on and on and on and on and on, without birth and without death. But it seems to perish with its mortal frame. It's as if the soul dies. When the body dies, then what has happened to the soul? Where has it gone? But it hasn't. No. It only seems to perish with its mortal frame. That presence, that fire, our psychic being, is assured of the apocalypse to be. It is absolutely convinced and certain of the divine revelation that will come. No. So it doesn't worry about minutes and hours. Great, patient, calm, it sees the centuries pass, awaiting the slow miracle of our change in the sure, deliberate process of world force and the long march of all revealing time. Gentlemen at the top, would you like to read?
It is the origin and the master view, a silence overhead, an inner voice, a living image seated in the heart, an unfoiled wideness and a fathomless point. The truth of all these cryptic shows in space, the real towards which our strivings move, the secret grandiose meaning of our lives, a treasure in the wounds of God, a splendor burning in a tenebrous cloak. It is our glory of the flame of God, our golden fountain of the world's delight, an immortality cowled in the cave
Thank you.
Can you tell what is exactly the sublime heavens?
Well, it starts, perhaps it refers to this larger self on line 86. Line 86 on page 48. These signs are native to a larger self that lives within us by ourselves unseen. And then he's expressing the ways in which that larger self, our own true self, expresses itself to us. So here he says, it is the origin. That's where we've come from. No? And at the same time, it's the master clue. The clue is the thread that shows you the way, you know, that you can follow to find out where you have to go. Somewhere else he says, our life is a paradox with God for key. This divine presence, this larger self within us, it's the master clue. We may experience it as a silence overhead, an inner voice. We may see a living image seated in the heart. We may experience an unwalled wideness or a point which is bottomless, unbelievably deep. No? It may appear to us as the truth which is supporting all these mysterious appearances here in space. No? We may recognize it as the one real thing which all our strivings in evolution are moving towards. No? It's the secret, grandiose meaning of our lives. Something enormously noble. The secret meaning is beyond anything we could imagine. So significant. It's a treasure of honey, of delight in the combs of God. Bees store their honey in combs. I was remembering this line this morning and thinking of my father who loved honey and who was very happy when he could get a bit of real honeycomb and eat the honey and the comb together. So God stores this ananda, this treasure of ananda. It's a splendor burning in this tenebrous cloak, this cloak of unknowability, ineffability, mystery, shadow. That larger self which lives within us to ourselves unseen is our glory of the flame of God. Our golden fountain of the world's delight. We can only experience the delight of the world because we are carrying this fountain within us. And it's an immortality. It's the state of immortality which lives within us, wearing this heavy, dark hood of mortality, of death, the body which will have to die. But in itself, it is the shape of our unborn divinity, that divine being which we must eventually realize here in the material world. There's an interesting talk of the mother in the agenda when she mentions one of her disciples visiting her, and she saw her enveloped in this huge form, and that made her realize, she said, it is the psychic being materializing that will become the supramental body, the shape of our unborn divinity. Rosa, will you read?
Right.
in the sanctuary, regards through time and the doing
blind. Thank you. That larger self, which is our origin and master clue and the shape of our unborn divinity, is keeping safe for us our fate, hidden in deep places within. Elsewhere in the poem, Sri Aurobindo tells us that the things that happen to us in our life or in our lives, that's not our fate. We may say, oh, it's fate, it's destiny, it had to happen like that. Fate is the choice that our true being has made. And here he says, it's an eternal seed. In these depths within, that eternal seed of the choice of the soul for this manifestation is sleeping. And it's the seed of transient things, things that will happen in the course of our lives. But that seed is being kept safe, and it will reach its full growth. We're always carrying within us this magic key. It's hidden in life's hermetic envelope. Something that's hermetic is very tightly sealed. Nothing can get in or out. But that key is there. Mm. Yes?
Yeah. The eternal seed of transient things. We plant a seed of banyan tree.
Yes.
We have the banyan tree. Transient things and eternal seed.
Yes, this seed of our fate, which the soul has chosen when it accepted to join this play of manifestation, that choice, gets expressed in many different ways, in different lives, in the course of our transient experience in time. But that seed is always responding in just the right way. And all transient things have an eternal seed, otherwise they couldn't exist at all. That's the ultimate output.
So
yes.
These events, as yeah. What you were saying, I think their lives, the events of our lives, ultimately when this is forward.
Yes, but since it's it's giving birth, sprouting out transient things, we can have expressions in time of the sprouts of this seed. Mm. What has brought us all to this book, to this place? This time. No? It's only transient, all this that we can see, but something eternal has brought us here, brought it all into existence. And it's kept in existence and it's kept sprouting in the right way because there's a witness, there's a presence, the soul presence, burning, pure, full of energy. In the sanctuary, in this deep, safe, central point, is watching through time, can see through all these blind walls of form, it can see what's really happening behind the material surfaces. There's a timeless light in the hidden eyes of that witness who is watching. He sees the secret things no words can speak. And he knows, the goal of the unconscious world. Where is all this going to? It has a goal, it has a purpose and a meaning and a significance. And he's remembering that, and he's watching, and he's keeping everything on track, guided by the heart of the mystery of the journeying years, all these many, many years of our earthly pilgrimage. Hmm? It's in a way fixed. It's not fixed in a way that our minds can understand. We can maybe get some glimpse of it. But there's a goal of the journeying years. And of course, Sri Aurobindo expresses to us in words that we can perhaps grasp or get a hint of what that goal might be. But it's much, much more mysterious even than that, yeah. But it's guided by a truth, this eternal seed, you know, that's giving rise to all the transient things. And we don't even know the value of the transient things. This is so interesting. We were reading about this somewhere the other day. The way that when we really come in contact with that key and that clue, the values change completely. May become the complete opposite of what we thought was valuable before, or in a different way, in a very deep way, we can see different values.
In entretien, Mother said about faith, you protect when the divine grace gives you the faith in many parts of your being.
You are protected, you mean? Yeah. Yeah. No. You protect the faith. Oh yes, if you have faith, don't. You must protect your faith if you have one, yes. Yes.
That is the gift of the divine.
Yes. Right. Yes, faith is a quality of the soul, and it reflects the knowledge of the soul. This one who knows the goal of the unconscious world and the heart of the mystery of the years. And that may not be expressed clearly in mental knowledge, but it's a wonderful
guiding gift.
A long
entretien in 1958.
Thank you.
The question of child, she said, why I perfect my faith? Alors first, Mother Ten is a gift and protect your inner faith. And he described in many levels. It's very, very long, but it's very interesting.
It's already almost 12 o'clock. We want to listen to Mother reading some of these passages, but first I'm going to share something else with you about next Sunday. Next Sunday we're expecting some of our governing board members to join us. And they will just join in. They will come not at the beginning, and they may not stay to the end. But we will just welcome them quietly, and they will join our session. We'll be happy to have them with us. Yes.
On the height he stood that looked towards greater heights, our early approaches to the infinite are sunrise splendors on a marvelous world. While lingers yet unseen the glorious sun, what now we see is a shadow of what must come. On the height he's a shapeless memory sometimes when our sight is turned within, earth's ignorant veil is lifted from our eyes. There is a short, miraculous escape. Our souls can visit in great, lonely hours, till reason of imperishable life, all seems either beat a silent power. And more flame ocean, a swift, fascinating bleach, and calm immensity of spirit. In moments when the inner lamps are lit, and the life's cave gates are left outside, our spirit sits alone and speaks to its spouse. A treasure of honey in the coast of God, a splendor burning in a timid boy's cloak. It is our glory of the flame of God, our golden fountain of the world's delight, an immortality carved in the cave of death, the shape of our unborn divinity.
Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.